Alright guys, good to be here again, Butch, and talking. We got it down again a week later instead of 3 weeks, so it's kind of exciting to keep the ball rolling this time. As you guys already know, we have our website, TopekaSportsPodcast.com. You can find us there. I'll try to post that every time I post the link to this. I also wanted to mention something that a few people have texted me and said, hey, I think so-and-so would be a good guest, or I think you guys should, you know, this or that, and I would appreciate that. I think Butch would too. If you guys want to hear something or want us to give more dates, that's something that we wouldn't mind hearing from you listeners, and we're hoping you're listening, so give us a thumbs up on Facebook. But yeah, I'm excited about a guest that we have today, but Butch is going to cover a few other things first, so go ahead, Butch.
Hey, guys. Yeah, just upcoming stuff. I don't know if this podcast is going to be released in time for before this weekend, but we have Open State is coming up in Topeka this weekend. We got 10 teams. That's kind of cool. 10 teams want to play in this. There are some teams, the B and C teams, need to play in this if they want to play in their respective national championships. What makes the tournament better is there are some D and E teams that stepped up and are wanting to play in it. There are points involved in two different series, tournament series. So, you know, they might be chasing points, but it's kind of nice to see, especially E teams, get in and put themselves in a position where they might play a B team or a C team and try to beat them, right? It's, yeah. What a concept, right?
Right?
And we want those guys to play up, get better, and then when they go play in their respective classifications, they will be, you know, ready for competition.
Kind of goes right along with what we talked about last week, right? About pushing yourself, right, to become better.
And, you know, there are great players playing in D and E, and in championship play, they can't hit very many home runs. Like in E, that it's zero. So it's breakdown all the time. But in D, I guess they can hit a couple. I think it's two. But then after that, like, you know, if you're the kind of player that wants to hit a fair ball and hit it as hard as you can, if you get the bottom half of one, you can blow it out. And then, you know, two guys do that. Now you're out. Now you have to break down. And that's it. So here they can free swing. They can hit six this weekend. So,
well, that'll be fun. That'll be fun.
So, yeah, we've got the golf cart has a lot of fuel in it. So we'll
the electric golf cart.
We'll check that. We'll chase balls all over the place. We'll chase balls till midnight. We don't care. And then the other thing that's coming up, we have one more qualifying tournament for the Midwest Softball Conference Championship. The last tournament before the championships is August 15th in Sturgis, Michigan. So the conference championships are in Michigan, are in Sturgis, and so is this last tournament. So, and the guy to call to get in is Josh Bano, and I have his phone number here, I think I do. And you can also call me, but Josh's number is 269-506-0130. Again, that's 269-506-0130. Like I said, he's a contact, but you can also enter through me. So we've got, I don't know, maybe seven or eight teams that are already interested in playing. So, yep, that's coming up. And then we definitely want to talk about conference championships. We've got, I think, not counting the 16U, we've got like 60 teams that have qualified, maybe even more. I'd have to look it up. We've got a bunch of teams qualified, so hopefully we can get most of those to come play in championships. So, oh wow, it's way more than that. It's like 75. So 75 teams have qualified, and that's not even counting the 16U, which is like 20 more. So kind of cool. Kind of cool if we get all those teams to play. And you know, we the awards are, I think, worth coming out and playing for. We give $6,000 away, and the winner in each class gets rings and other all tournament stuff and MVP. And so, yeah, heck yeah. All right. So is there anything more, Judd, that you wanted to talk about that real quick, or do you want to get into
our... I'm just going to throw out something I forgot, league schedule or second half. We're not doing a fall league this year. We're just going to continue on with the second half, and that'll pretty much end around the same time normally. So that goes for you, anyone that plays league in Topeka.
Right.
Something I forgot to mention at the beginning.
Church League is a shorter season, so they're done around Labor Day. So we talked about having a co-ed league. I don't know if we're going to do that, but we might. So if you guys want to play some co-ed, make sure you check the website and Facebook and see us at the park, and or text and call us. We'll give you more details as that stuff comes up. So, all right, cool. So, all right, let's get into our guest. All right, it's Keith Schmidt from LaGrange. He was one of my teammates for a bunch of years. So, hey, welcome aboard, dude.
How you doing? Good to see you guys.
Yeah, yeah, heck yeah. For those of you that don't know, his family owned Lewis Quality Homes, and they sponsored for a bunch of years. So, yeah, when did you start playing?
I started after college in 1989. 1989 in LaGrange League. Picked up by Fashion Floor. And you were playing for the Moose.
I was? That time. Okay, really?
With Brian Heller, Wally.
Yeah.
And then Sheppy and the Neff Brothers and Pfeiffer and Mioneers were all with B&B Sanitation at the time.
Oh, man. No
how
kidding.
That, how far back is that? Huh?
So that's in 89. Yeah. So, yeah, I started in 81 and played for Topeka Auction from 82 to 87. So, yeah, in 88, I played in Goshen with a team. We played some tournaments. But, yeah, I do remember playing with Moose Lodge.
Yeah, it might have been just league or whatever, but yeah, I go down there because I played basketball on the basketball courts. You guys be hitting them in there, so I said, hey, why don't I hit them back at these guys?
Yeah, cool. So tell me a little bit about, so that was in the late 80s. Tell us a little bit about you now. You've got a wife and a couple kids, right?
Yes, I have a wife, Michelle, and three kids, Zach and Dalton and Heather.
Yeah.
And they all hang around the ballpark.
Exactly like it should be.
Heather's always in the concession stand. She loves being around the ballpark. So.
And then Dalton and Zach, they both play. Yep. We need to, well, hopefully they can find a tournament team and play more, play on the weekends if they want to. But so high school, let's talk a little bit about that. When you graduated from Lakeland, what year?
Graduated in 87 and then played baseball and basketball there. And then from there I had quite a few offers to go, but I was hooked with a girlfriend, so I didn't go anyway,
really?
At old age. I had about 20 scholarships to play basketball.
Serious?
Wow. Yeah, the biggest one was in Northern Illinois. Northern Iowa. And the other one was far away as Florida, unseen. My basketball coach just sent a tape down to him. They said, can you come down here? And all they did was basketball and fast pitch men's softball. They didn't have baseball down there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Really? Yeah. College had men's fast pitch
down
softball.
In Florida. That was it. No baseball in that one. And the other one that was really close was Huntington. Wanted to do basketball, baseball. But I went to Glen Oaks up in Michigan, Centerville, Michigan, just outside of Sturgis.
Yeah.
And I played baseball there before I started up softball.
So you played there for 2 years. Yeah. That's a two-year college, right?
It's a two-year college. And I was around, so you're around Friday nights, right? So out at the football, you get hooked up with somebody, and Guzzy was still hanging around and that. And that's how I got hooked up with Doug Cassard, Fashion Floor, and Jeff Wire. They were all related and said, hey, you want to play league since you're around? Bob Bond and some of those guys, and Ryan Young and Gerald Young.
Man, those are those are all guy. I mean, those are blasts from the past.
Yeah.
Wow, no kidding.
And we started playing league, and Bill Eberhard.
Yeah, cool.
Was pitching.
He was.
He was a pitcher for that team. That's how I met Bill Eberhard.
Really? Wow.
Funny thing is, he was a coach for my future wife's women's team there in LaGrange.
Michelle played.
Played for him before. She played with Dave Smith, with Mickey and Dee's.
So Bill played here, played men's league. Maybe not. Yeah, he might have played here.
He did.
At that time. Yeah. But he played men's and coached a women's team. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, there are less people spending a lot less time at the ballpark than they did back then. You went to the ballpark pretty much every night, somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Even as we progressed on and started playing in Topeka, higher competition on that, I'd have Roy Stidham and those guys with the Dometic team always wanted to pick you up, so I'd take extra swings there. Our team would play three leagues. We'd play Kendallville, Fort Wayne, and Topeka, so four nights a week. And then you pick up co-ed, you're pretty much booked, and then the weekend. So it was awesome.
What? There's nothing better, man.
No, there's not.
But, yeah. I think back then, so the guys now, last week we talked about players being better at a younger age, like 16 and under teams now. Good young Amish teams that may be playing E that are only 17, like the Silverback guys. They're like 21 and under.
Easy.
And I think they work hard at their craft more than we did, but they'll play less league games. Back then, we didn't take batting practice before a league game.
No.
Let's go out there and get swings.
League was to warm up for the weekends. That was our mentality. Get better, work on your game during league. And then, of course, you want to win. But if we got double dipped by Shively's, but we could beat Shively's on the weekend, you can have the weekday. We'll take the weekend. That's what it was like back then. Now you want to win all the time.
Right. Yeah, we kind of grew up, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you start playing? When did you put Lewis Quality Homes together?
So we went 2 years with a Fashion Floor team. And then we wanted to get into weekends. Got a little bug. There would be tournaments down there in LaGrange and that. So Guzzy and some Westview boys, we'd get together. Pat Troyer.
Oh, yeah.
And Troy Tritipu. And some of those guys would come over. And then we'd play on the weekend. And it's like, hey, this is pretty good. Let's start doing this a little bit more. So that's kind of how the bug started.
Did you play for LA Explosion?
That was another one. If we weren't playing that weekend and I could go play with them, I can tell you stories. My wife was where I'd play LA Explosion. We play four or five games, get beat out. I have a tournament the next night, so I get on the road. I'd go up to Battle Creek and play a tournament there, and we end up winning it with Kaz Moore and those guys. It'd be a co-ed the next day. So I always had something in it brewing. If something got beat, I was going to the next one playing all weekend.
And that was before you had cell phones. So how in the heck did you smoke signals or something? Hey, let's get over here.
When they would call me and say, hey, can you be up here on Sunday? I'd tell them I can't be there Saturday. I'll be Sunday if we get beat. And I'd give them a phone call before I left Muncie that day and drove up to Battle Creek that next morning. 8 o'clock, we were playing all day.
Yep.
Those were the best times.
So I remember playing in Coldwater. I was playing for Shively's. This must have been early 2000s. 2000s, what am I saying? 90s. Early 90s. We were playing for Shively's, and Bill Eberhard's LA Explosion team was there because Pat Troyer, Troy Tridipu, Brown, David Brown?
Yeah, David Brown.
But you
and
didn't
his
play
brother with Earl Brown. Now, yeah. So yeah, at that point, that was when we branched off and picked up with the McDonald's guys.
Oh, that's right. Donnie Griffin.
And we kind of got hooked up with them in between, just before we went into our own and put it together. Sheppy was playing, which was Chris Conrad, was playing for Chowders and Jay Great and Strutt, Dave Seibel.
That's right.
In Class A in Fort Wayne. He wanted to come back close. He was tired of traveling to Coliseum every week and then traveling all over. So he wanted to get a local team. So Sheppy came back. We picked up some of the McDonald's guys like Biz, Dan Hart.
We'll talk about him again later.
and Dave Hetler. And we took some of the guys from over there and then our LaGrange guys. And we meshed, and that was the first year we put together. We had four sponsors. Fanning Farms, Daiso Chiropractic,
really,
Dairy Queen. It was still on the range on the corner by
the post office. Best place to go post game.
Yeah, and then Lewis Quality Homes was our first travel team with those four that we were really competitive.
So, do you any idea what year that was? Was that in 1990?
So, all that was with McDonald's from 90, 91, and then 92, we started putting that team together towards the end of 92. And 93 season is when it kicked in. And how it kicked in was Highland, where we won our first state championship. There was 32 teams over there. And I was telling Butch about this earlier that there was a deadline. And back then you had to play the highest class of your players. So Sheppy was B. We got him reclassified to B. He went from A to B. So most of us hadn't played ASA. You know, Biz did a little bit with STI and that at D level with semi-states and that. The rest of us had never even seen a sanction or knew what we were getting into. And Biz comes to me, and you just got to know Biz. He's just kind of a laid-back guy. And he just said, you know, Schmitty, said, why don't we just play with our teammates and let's go with Sheppy and let's go to B State over in Highland.
Because the alternative would have been to play maybe D, and but not with your full team. Right.
Without him. And he says, you know, let's just do that. I happen to have a blank
check. He didn't say that. He goes, Schmitty, let's do that.
That's exactly what it is. Just that draw, laid back. But he's competitive as heck.
Oh, it's so funny.
But so I got that check to Butch at league night. 10 p.m. was the deadline. And I probably got it to you at about 6:30 when I got it to you.
And for those of you that don't know, back then the deadline was the deadline. And the deadline was 9 days before the tournament. So you gave it to me on Thursday night, but that the tournament was like for a whole week yet. So, yeah, it was
so like a pre-planned.
Jeez, and okay. That. You had so to have your organized ducks in a row.
It was very organized. You had to have your ducks in a row or you missed out on that. So we go over there, and it's the craziest thing in the world. And we'll come back to Biz because we won our first two games in extra innings by one run on both of them. And I'll tell you the story about Biz, and this is just kind of how he is. We're down by one in the bottom of the eighth. Runner on second, two outs. He crushes one, and this is single ball. He has the first deamer in. It's a white one. It's a single ball, and he crushes one about 330 foul. And we're like, dang. Shortstop comes in, must have been the coach or whatever, to the pitcher, and said something we don't know. He bowls. He actually rolls the ball on the ground to the catcher on the next pitch. And we're like, gosh, dang it. You know, we still got some home runs left. And pitcher goes to the shortstop. Don't know what was said. Next pitch went 330 fair, and we won.
So the pitcher talked to
the shortstop's a little bit frustrated with the pitcher. And we're happy as heck. And then we won the next one in 8 innings. Oh, actually, it went 9 innings, and we won by 1. And we never came closer than 4 or 5 runs. We dimed JR Polishing, which was a big boys team at the time. At one time, they paid some of their players a little bit for weekends, but they were playing B at that time. And Gerke was on that team. We dimed them. We dimed a big team out of Fort Wayne, New Insulation.
Yeah, good team.
And just confidence after confidence and rolled into the final game. And we've been told by the director all weekend, you know, we're kind of small-town boys, so we're just all hanging around the diamond in between games all the time. And the director's always talking to us and saying, yeah, this team's the team to beat. This team's the team to beat. And sure as crap, we're finding them in the finals. And the wind's just howling in.
I'm going to interrupt you here for a second, Schmitty. So for those listening here, by that time, my team was eliminated.
So you were at that tournament.
I didn't know you were at that tournament. I couldn't remember who was all there.
We were there. We saw your first two games. I think we played after you. Or maybe before you, and we stuck around and watched
Coach
your game.
Was playing Topeka League that year, and they were from the Elkhart South Bend area, kind of like street kids are. They were kind of that mix, but it was Coachman sponsored them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dean Schmidt's team.
They were too. Yeah.
Hey, go ahead.
But we'll get back to them when we come back about how important league was compared to weekends. So we ended up having to play these guys. Wind was blowing in about 20 miles an hour on the diamond. We're supposed to play diamond 1. So just before this, the director comes, hey, these guys want to move over to diamond 4. So that's opposite, and the wind's blowing straight out to center. And I look at him and said, absolutely not. That thing says diamond 1. This is where the rules are. We're playing diamond 1. I mean, you got to know these guys are horses. I mean, they can just crunch it. They hit, I bet you, at least 4 or 5 balls that the wind just brought back in. Nice, easy popcorn right in our gloves. So we're going back and forth. We're up a couple of runs. It's about the 4th, 5th inning. And Chris Conrad, Sheppy, we talked about earlier, that the reason why we're playing this, bases loaded. We got Carl Rose single wall. And these big guys, he's probably, what, 165, 170, soaking wet. Bat speed from heck. These guys are 230, 220, built like brick house. He hits about a 15-foot line drive that is probably still going today through the wind, grand slam. These guys couldn't believe it.
You guys went freaking nuts.
Freaking nuts. So that was our first experience, and that just turned the switch for all of us.
So did that win the game?
That put us ahead. 2 innings, I mean, we played good defense. Our forte was good defense, timely hitting. And what's funny is I said we dime everybody, but we never got ahead of them until the 4th inning of every game that we won. We were trailing the first half of every game, and then we just kicked it in.
Good for you. So. Those are games and tournaments you just remember forever.
You do.
But did you lose a game in that tournament?
Mm-mm.
Cool. I think we probably got eliminated and went home and found out like 2 days later, 3 days later that you won it, because back then you could go to the internet and it wasn't live. No, we couldn't watch it on Facebook Live in 1993.
Exactly. And these tournaments, and you see it now, and I'm sure a lot of people relate to it now, but it's a crowd on Saturday. And then Sunday starts thinning out. Then you're in this championship game for all the marbles, and you look around and it's crickets. And it's everybody? We're just playing like a league night.
I know. I know exactly what you're saying. So it's so different than the 4th of July the XKE from the standpoint of, wow, the biggest game in this tournament, the championship game, nobody's around except maybe a few wives and girlfriends and the tournament director and – That's it. But that was kind of a grow-up tournament for you guys, wasn't it?
That was a huge.
Now you're like, all right, we're actually pretty good.
Exactly. We're like, okay, we belong. And, we talk about all the games we played. There was a 3-year span where we lost less than 20 games in 3 years, and we played over 360 games. I've got the books, and I look back at that, and I was like, holy cow, how many games were we playing?
You still have the books?
Oh, yeah, I still have the books from back then. So it's
so now we've got to talk about Nationals. So you picked me and another guy up at for Nationals.
Yep, Rocky Miller.
Yep. Rocky and I went to the National Championship with you. And a couple things about that National Championship that I'll never forget. But so it was in Lawton, Oklahoma, and I went online to get some information, but it's not available. I don't know how many teams were there, but it rained. And I bet there must have been there had to be over 100 teams there, right?
There was just shy. It was 98 because back then you had to show up to the coaches meeting ahead of time and they drew your team out and put your, so you have the 1 through 98 on the bracket and they would draw number one. If that was your name, if you were the first one, you went in slot one and it was a hand draw and the coaches had to draw, you know, so that's how they put us in place on the coaches. But yeah, it was 98 teams. And remember, we played, one of them was on a baseball field on a military base. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Heck yeah. Yeah. So the official scorekeepers were soldiers. Yeah. And it had rained. So if you've got 98 teams and it rains, it becomes a mess. We were playing.
It became an all-nighter.
Yeah. Umpires were dead tired. They would have to play or work so many games in a row. And the tournament wasn't at one site. So every site had its own manager, and the soldiers were getting drunk, talking trash to players at 2 in the morning, and nobody told them to umpires. Dude, the umpire, remember how the umpires would take breaks in their trailer?
Yeah.
And they'd be there for a half hour.
Oh, yeah. You remember, we went to McDonald's. This one wasn't 24 hours. And we, in between going from one site to the other to the next game, we were waiting for McDonald's to open up so we could get a bite to eat before we went to the next field to play our games.
Guzzi hit a 400-foot bomb on a baseball field where we didn't have to worry about home runs because it was such a big field. Yeah. Guzzi hit a bomb. It was unreal. But it rained. We played in crap fields that nobody should have had to play in.
No. Especially a national tournament.
Yeah, it was an absolute. But the thing I got to talk to you about. So do you remember when we then went to the next morning? I don't know if it was Sunday or heck, I can't remember. The next morning, we went to a different site, and a groundskeeper was sleeping in his truck with the truck running, and his foot was on the brake and on the gas.
Yes.
And it was in gear, or maybe it was a four-speed or anyway, for some reason.
It was a military Hummer, if you remember right. And Biz came over and didn't want to startle the guy because he saw that.
Yeah, it was in gear.
It was in gear.
If his feet move, the Hummer starts rolling.
It was going.
And the car was, engine was running.
It was a Hummer hard. Or a Jeep. It was a military thing.
So I walked up to the guy. And I was going to tap on the window and wake him up. And Biz, so for those of you that don't know Biz, his real name is Dan Hart from Kendallville. Great guy. Haven't seen him in years, but he's a good dude. And anyway, he goes, Butch, you don't want to wake him up. He'll run right through the fence and he'll be out on the field. Oh, my God. It was so fun. But somehow, like before our game started, somebody took the chance and woke him up and put the truck out of gear. But, dude, it was unreal. There were so many things about that tournament that was just crazy.
There was. That was our first experience of an ASA National.
But sometime during those early 90 years, because at that time I was playing for Shively Chiropractic, and then I played with you guys some for like Moose State and Moose Nationals. Mm-hmm. But we were playing for LaGrange Moose Lodge with some of your guys. So it was like Floyd Miller, Rocky, and I from our travel team. And then most of you guys played in some smallish town in Central Indiana.
Greenwood, Indiana.
Moose State.
Greenwood, Indiana.
Some of the guys that you guys met through the Winchester All-Nighter was blowing Sheppy some crap. Remember that?
I remember that.
So
you know that those guys were from Tanks, and we had played them in Shippensshore.
Tanks video,
A&O Open team, and we had played them the weekend, and maybe a couple weekends before up in Shippensshore in New Buffalo.
Yeah, no, that was a good tournament too, wasn't it?
That
was one of those tournaments that shouldn't have died.
No, it shouldn't have. That was a great one.
It was the beer drinking trophy was 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
Unreal. But anyway, back on topic here. So for those, you know, Sheppy was one of these guys that was, I don't know, 6 feet tall, skinny as a rail. He had power. He had speed. He could play any position. Mm-hmm. He could play anywhere. He was that good.
Oh, a rocket arm.
But and back then, you guys, everybody else played four-man outfield. Mm-hmm. He would always play left center. And he would – so left center was kind of boring, right? So he would play shallow and try to get people to try to burn him. Well, how many times does that work, right? Doesn't work very often.
Not very often.
But so he got burned a few times. Those guys were talking smack. Oh. They actually – pissed Biz off. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Biz comes in off the field from first base and he goes, I can't remember what all he said, but he was like, somebody flipped his switch and he got this intensity that, but anyway, Sheppy wore number 10 and they were talking about how they like to see the back of his shirt, meaning he's running back to the fence to pick up the ball. So he started to – he played the rest of the game wearing his shirt backwards. Yep. So he's facing the infield with the number 10 on his front. Oh, my goodness.
I didn't know if you remember that.
So funny. Yep. So funny.
And we beat those guys.
So funny. But, all right, so we could probably talk about a number of different things. But one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about is some trick plays. Is that cool? You want to do that?
Yeah.
All right. So one of the trick plays was with Biz. By then we were teammates. This was probably in about 1998. He was playing first and I was pitching, and the trick actually didn't work. But it was so funny to try. Anyway, runner on first, less than two outs. And I held my glove up and put a one behind it so that the runner and the coach at first couldn't see it, but Biz could. I said, hey, Biz, two outs, right? And he goes, yep. And I went right into pitching so that the runner and the coach couldn't talk about it. Runner takes off. Batter hits it. Runner takes off. Well, the batter got a hit, so it didn't work. I don't know. The runner ended up on third or whatever. And Biz is over there just dying laughing. He goes, Butch, that would have worked if he wouldn't have got a hit. We'd have got a double play so easily.
Oh, Biz was great that way. Always coming so up fun. With stuff.
Another thing that I would like to see, I've never seen it, but I've heard it work. It's the ball in the sun. Have you ever seen this work? A ball in the sun. So it works with less than two outs, and it works best during the day, like a Saturday when the sun's high. Outfielder, but I guess it would actually work better now because there's three outfielders instead of four usually, because you don't want another teammate to run into the guy that was supposed to catch it. But as the, you know, less than two outs, runners want to take advantage and start running as soon as they can. Well, you want the outfielder to act like he can't see it and then yell as loud as he can, I can't see it, I can't see it. And then the runners take off, hopefully, and then he catches it and fires it into the infield and try to get like a triple play. I've never seen it work, but I'm thinking we've got somebody somewhere has to try to make that work. But of all the games I've played, I've never seen it happen. But anyway, another thing that you did, you and I talked about, is the third baseman not acting like he's receiving the ball.
Right.
Not acting like he's receiving the ball. So you did a good job of that. You just stood there, and then the runner – who may not be paying attention to his coach, or the coach not paying very good attention, and you just, instead of the runner sliding into third, you just, because actually, if you think about it, the runner going from second to third when the ball is coming from center field or right field uses the fielder as a key of where the ball's going to go. The coaches oftentimes don't do a great job of saying, ball's over here, slide there kind of stuff. They just kind of...
That's right. You look at the fielder's eyes and they start getting big, or he starts moving his glove or something to where the ball is coming. You kind of know where to slide, or if you need to slide at all. Absolutely.
So you would stand there and then catch and tag. And then the runner would get pissed off at the coach for not communicating better. And you're over there going, hey, we got two out. Or whatever.
Unfortunately, I always have good throws for the most part. Got good throws, and you can do that.
You also have to have infielders, middle infielders, that know that could happen, so they always look.
Yeah, and there's a lot of little things in this game that people don't know to get that competitive edge. And that, you know, one time when we first started playing, and as a middle infielder or infielder anywhere, you get to know your pitcher and how he pitches batters and where things go. And I remember four man, and they hit a ball hard right past you. And I snagged it. And you kind of looked at me like, what the heck are you doing there? But I knew the way you were pitching, so I could cheat and I could move with that. And that was part of playing together and knowing each player and their things. When Tyler played left field, Cat knew he was going to try to get the runner on a first and third at third. Okay, on first, and they're trying to go to first to third on a base hit to left. And he knew Rome was going to throw it to third whether he could get the guy or not. So Cat... Chad Marchand knew that. So he, knowing baseball, would come out and meet it with about three or four steps. I knew what he was going to do. He'd catch it. The batter who thought it was throw was going to third, he would throw it back to me at second. We'd tag him out. I bet you we did that for the first 3 years for I don't know how many times, you know, because it was always you go first to third. You're supposed to go first to third. If they throw after the lead runner, you better be on second behind you. And that was just one of those plays, just getting to know one another and how they work.
One thing that I saw a guy do that I'll never forget it, but I wouldn't know how to teach a guy how to do it right. But I think this got taught in baseball. Guy base hit. This is the third baseman doing it defensively. I saw this in Valdosta, Georgia at ASA Nationals umpteen years ago. But I think Mucciarelli was on the hill for one of the teams. Warthen Fuel was playing, I think. Anyway, runner is going home from first or second, and he's in full stride. And the guy on the third baseman who's not in the play, throw's not coming in, what he's trying to do is get the runner to break stride. And he goes, like if he makes contact with the runner, it's dead ball, and the runner gets as many bases as the umpire thinks he can. But he runs right in front of the runner to try to get him to slow down. A smart runner would have maybe, or I don't know if it's smart or not, but a smart runner might have been able to make a incompetent or lesser umpire talk him into interference by stumbling on purpose. But if the umpire would have said he did that on purpose, there was no contact anyway, I just thought, whoa, that's really smart. But it's really hard to teach. But that was one of the things. One of the things I remember doing a few times, and it works with a runner on first on a base hit to right field going to third, and a ball to left field, runner going from second to third and then home, is Chicky and some other guys that we played ball with that had really strong arms in the outfield. Doggy had a good arm. Mm-hmm. We would say, or I would say, like, so the runner's going, he's got the one base for sure, and he's trying for the next base. So let's say base hit to right field and the guy's on first. He's got second. He's now going to third. Early on, when he's going from second to third, I would yell, "Great throw," and hit my glove and act like I caught it. And then I went into my motion to throw it. And you would actually get runners sometimes to break stride and get a little confused. But see, that's stuff that we don't, you don't see that happening much. Maybe everybody's smarter than we were back then.
Maybe. Maybe you don't see that. You're right. That stuff you did.
So, yeah, those are fun things to take advantage of. I think, probably still works some. Another thing that I tried to do when I saw it happen at the XKE, Creekside did it a few times very well. They would have first baseman or the third baseman on a throw, especially in the dirt. They would catch the ball and then run to the fence or along the fence, acting like they didn't have it and were running after it, try to get the runner to go, and then throw him out at the next base. When I was with Team Synergy coaching those young dudes, we worked on that, but that's actually really harder to practice than I thought it would be. But see, those are all goofy little things that actually work sometimes you look like an idiot for doing it, but a good ball player appreciates that.
Sure. You're trying to get the advantage any way you can. Make sure that they're paying attention and not sleeping at the wheel, for sure.
So, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, you just try that stuff. I mean, the first time I ever seen a first baseman play in the line was Biz, where he would play in the line.
Baseline.
And a bullet would come at him. He'd grab it, tag the runner, and touch first. and that was in 93. And, where he picked – or 94 – he picked that up out in Lawton, Oklahoma. So you just pick up as you watch the game from other players. Like you said, well, you've seen this here. Let's try it there. He did that. Then Sloaney, my next teammate after him at first base, did the same thing because they're both from Kinderville, and it worked. And then you see it. Just continue because it's something that works. But you got to be able to catch the ball.
Wow. Hey, different subject here, but what year did you win your first 4th of July? Do you know?
It'd be 90. I don't know right off the hand, 94, 95. It was
94.
94, because I thought it just everything started clicking right after that 93 year.
And then we put Lewis together in 96.
96.
I was with Shively's till 1994, and then I played for Tiffany's in 95. Then in 96, Floyd Miller. Rocky Strutt.
Yep.
I think it was us four. Maybe Darren. No, Dog. Darren. Darren played for Dog. Played for Tiffany's for another year.
Yeah, it was. Yep. Tiffany's.
And then we went on a run too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There was a run there between which started your season back then. It was 4th of July and the next KE, and there was like. Seemed like 8 years, 9 years in a row, we were in the finals, going back and forth. You win some, you lose some, but you're always in the finals of those, which is a great accomplishment with a competition. Because I always said XKE and the 4th of July are like state tournaments, really, with the competition.
Yeah. We kind of looked at it as that's the start of the second half. Because by then, you had your lineup set. If you had some new teammates or whatever, you kind of might experiment a little bit with a different lineup once in a while. But 4th of July and then the XK kind of started our second half, and that's when the state tournament started and your run started.
You don't want to get hot early. You want to get hot at the 4th of July on. For sure.
Yeah. All right, we could probably go on for hours, right, Schmitty?
We can.
Hopefully everybody that hears this enjoyed it, and we'll sign off for now, but we'll do it again. Thanks for listening, guys. Talk to you soon.